This is Audible.
The black-armored interrogator chaplain paced around his charge, the dormant Crozius Arcanum at his hip, alive with the promise of violence. Asmodai did not allow his gaze to drift from the seated figure, whose armor was a mirror of his own, the white-winged sword icon stark against the dark Ceramite.
Are you here to judge me, Master Asmodai? To torture me into revealing the knowledge I have gleaned?
The walls of the chamber dampened all sound. Even this deep in the rock, the words prized from the lips of prisoners were meant only for the ears of their interrogator. Asmodai halted his circuit, his eyes locked on the seated but unshackled Dark Angel, so long estranged from the fraternity of his chapter. He leaned in close.
No, Brother Balthazar. I am here for your confession.
Death Watch, The Last Guardian, by C.Z. Dunn. Performed by Gareth Armstrong, John Banks, Tim Bentinck, Steve Conlin, Jonathan Keeble, Penelope Rawlins, and Tania Rodriguez.
I do not understand the continued need for secrecy. We are clear of the strike cruiser and en route to our mission, whatever that may be. We have given 10 years of exemplary service to the Death Watch, yet still you insist on treating us like fledgling scouts.
Gallius gestured to the other 4 space marines in the troop hold of the Corvus Black Star gunship as he addressed the much smaller figure seated in the darkness at the rear of the compartment.
How many times must we go through this, Nova Marine?
Balthazar inclined his head.
Inquisitor Shriver will brief us when the time is right, just as she did on Ingram X, Prism, and every other mission this kill team has undertaken. So, why don't you sit down, return to your meditations, and leave the rest of us to do the same? Something amusing you, pup?
The Dark Angel fixed his bareheaded space wolf comrade with a harsh stare, but the Fenrisian continued to snigger in derision.
Tolgar thinks it funny that the Dark Angel is advocating the keeping of secrets.
Though the enmity between their 2 chapters had stood for millennia, Balthazar and Tolgar had been able to set their prejudices aside to form an effective duo. Each of them had lost count of how many times they had saved the other's life, but any sense of loyalty was reserved solely for the battlefield.
I think Tolgar should wear a helmet to protect what little brains he still has.
Tolgar nudged the battle brother sitting alongside him with his elbow.
Shall I tell you some of the Dark Angel's secrets, brother?
The other space marine, clad entirely in black, even where normally his chapter icon would remain exposed, ignored the space wolf.
It is said on Fenris that when the Dark Angels have fled the battlefield and returned to the rock, they go about the place naked, anointing their bodies with oil and...
Please, brother, do not continue.
In the time that the kill team had fought together, Cuth had remained an enigma. Only Shriver knew from which chapter he was drawn, though his prowess in battle made his Death Watch brothers all the more eager to learn of his past. In spite of that, Balthazar had always felt ill at ease around Cuth. There was something about him that made the Dark Angel uncomfortable. It was in the way that he carried himself, in the way that he spoke, in the way that he never lost his cool. In the entire time that Balthazar had fought alongside him, those words spoken to Tolga were the angriest he had heard Cuth utter. The 5th and final warrior stood.
Yes, Tolga, spare us the depraved fantasies of you and your Fenrisian ilk.
The dim red lighting of the troop compartment reflected off the silver of his right pauldron, the white skull insignia turning the color of fresh blood. He motioned for Gallius to retake his seat, and the Nova Marine obeyed, without question.
It is time, Captain Corica.
The lithe figure of Inquisitor Shriver emerged from the shadows and took up position alongside the Doom Eagle, though the top of her head barely reached Corica's elbow. She did not waste time on pleasantries or unnecessary ceremony.
For some months now, I have been attempting to locate a dead Eldar craftworld by the name of Kaer Is. 3 days ago, I received intelligence that it had been detected on the very fringes of Segmentum Obscurus.
For the most part, the Inquisitor had very little interaction with the kill team outside of missions, allowing them free rein of the lower decks of her inquisitorial vessel, Iron Will, but now her natural authority rose to the fore.
7 hours ago, visual confirmation was sent from an Ordo Malleus observation craft.
The 5 space marines looked to each other. Tolga arched an eyebrow.
Ordo Malleus.
Shriver ignored him.
Kaer Is is drifting lifelessly through the void, its dormant infinity circuit no longer capable of powering the sub-light drives. But although the craft world has been dead for centuries, its treasures have yet to be plundered.
Treasures? Is that what we are here for? To rob an alien tomb?
Shriver bristled. The lens of her augmetic right eye shrank as she diverted her focus solely onto the Nova Marine.
The Ordo Xenos seek an artifact known to be on board.
Craft worlds are vast. It could take years for us to find what we seek.
I have very specific intelligence regarding its location. Our insertion point is very close to the artifact.
Then why don't you send the observation crews in to retrieve it? The craft world is dead, after all.
There are complications.
Shriver smiled, the mass of scar tissue surrounding her mouth and cheekbones puckering to give her a sinister aspect.
Kaer Is fell to the predations of the ruinous powers.
Shriver did not have to utter the name of the wanton deity responsible for the destruction of the craft world. Slaanesh, the Prince of Pleasure, had long hungered for the souls of the Eldar race. An entire craft world would be the jewel in the centerpiece of his crown.
Though the craft world is bereft of all life, those from beyond the veil still linger.
Cuth's head rose at this, like a canine picking up the scent of blood. But it was Gallius that spoke.
Why don't the Ordo Malleus send their Grey Knights to claim the artifact? Ah, they don't know we're here, do they?
The nature of the artifact makes it desirable to both Ordos. Naturally, I believe that it would be safest under the protection of the Ordo Xenos.
Protection? You have no desire to utilize this artifact, then?
I have no intention of using it.
But how will we know what we are looking for?
I will be there to identify it.
The kill team looked to each other once again. In almost a decade, Shriver had never accompanied them physically on a mission, choosing to command them from orbit or a safe distance from their target. It was not that the Inquisitor was afraid of combat. It was that she recognized her strengths lay in planning and coordination. Corica was the field commander and had brought his Death Watch brothers back safely time after time. The sense of unease amongst the kill team was palpable nonetheless.
Why now, Madam Inquisitor? Why do you choose to lead us on this mission?
Because I have been to Kaer Is before.
Tolga was the first among them, the roar of his chainsword matched by the howl of his jump pack, demon limbs tumbling to the ground as he flew through the gap blasted in the shell of the craft world by the Corvus Blackstar. 3 of his Death Watch brothers followed, their bolt of fire covering the close assault. Bizarre, gangly things charged at them, simultaneously hideous and beautiful, enticing yet lethal.
Keep moving! Do not let them overwhelm you!
The Inquisitor glided in through the rent in the outer fabric of Wraithbone, borne aloft by her own jump pack. Her carapace armor was of the most brilliant gold, with vicious barbs running along the length of her forearms. Though none of the kill team had discussed it openly, each of them could not help but notice the similarity to some unknown Xenos war gear. Huff strode into the heart of the battle. As he went, he bathed the area before him with fire, gouts of promethium spilling from his heavy flamer. A throng of demons flooded into the space vacated by their fallen brethren, but Kuth was already safely away, the confused enemy seemingly oblivious to what had happened. Gallius rose high above the throng of Neverborn and rained down death before returning to the ground and engaging survivors with his power sword. Korika fought beside him, corralling the spawn of Slaanesh in a tight area and dispatching them with impunity. From a distance, Balthazar covered them both with punishing bolter fire, picking off any demon that got too close to or tried to outflank the two sons of Gilliman.
Beware! Reinforcements!
The sickly stench of charred demon flesh gave way to an ammoniac tang. The air filled with static charge, and in an eye blink, the kill team was surrounded by newcomers to the fray. Clawed things, slender and nominally female in form, birthed from the Immaterium, lashing out at the Space Marines as they came. The first wave fell quickly, the Death Watch guns taking their ungainly legs from beneath them, but more demonettes clambered over the corpses to reach their mortal prey.
Tolga fights Xenos for so long, he forget how good it feels to slay demons!
The Space Wolf grinned broadly, thick strands of saliva dripping from his fangs. He thrust his chainsword, impaling two of the creatures at once, punching out with his other arm to collapse the ribcage of another.
I'm astonished you can even remember your own name, Space Wolf!
Tolga was about to bite back when his chainsword snagged, the pair of demonettes hanging limply from its cutting edge. The Fenrisian shook the weapon vigorously, trying to dislodge the corpses so he could deal with a trio of fresh foes. Wicked claws snapped at him, but he was already gone, a heat haze in his wake as he launched upwards on his jump pack. He held his chainsword point downwards, gravity pulling the slain demonettes from it to crash into the melee below. Still unseen by the demonic horde, Kuth stalked at the fringe of the battle, jetting forth controlled bursts from his heavy flamer, never letting any single member of the kill team become isolated. Though it was far from over, the enigmatic warrior had put them in a position where victory looked inevitable.
Finish them!
Inquisitor Shriver's golden armor had lost its sheen, purple and green ichor coating the dented breastplate and greaves. But her zeal was undiminished, and she felled half a dozen more of the spawn with her plasma pistol before taking down a demonette poised to strike at Korika's exposed back. The rest of the kill team followed her example, one final crescendo of withering fire, turning the chamber of the craft world into a maelstrom of bolt shells, plasma, and flame. When the firing stopped, Shriver looked to Kuth, offering a barely perceptible nod. The other four Space Marines picked their way through the ruined forms of demons scattered in horrific repose across the ornate wraithbone floor. Gallius shouldered his hammer and listened intently.
What is that noise?
The others stopped what they were doing.
It's the craft world. When the people of Kaer'ys fell, so too did the world itself. It has been corrupted to its very core. And to the Eldar race, that is a fate worse than a thousand deaths. To survive, yet be enthralled to the enemy they fear most. The craft world screams because it is in a state of perpetual torture. Every instant of its existence is an unimaginable horror, made worse by the knowledge that there is no release. Its suffering shall be eternal.
If we were to destroy it, would that end its suffering?
The kill team turned to face their leader. They had followed Korika for years and had slain countless Xenos under his command, but not a single one of those deaths had been euthanasia.
Ours is a mission of recovery, Captain, not mercy.
She holstered her pistol.
However, there is no guarantee that during the course of our mission...
Inquisitor!
Kuth's warning came too late. A demonette, feigning death among the bodies of its vanquished brethren, sprang forth from where it had been hiding and clasped the Inquisitor around the torso with one of its fiendish claws. Shriver struggled in its grip, the androgynous creature trying to shake the life from her and preventing the Space Marines from firing upon them both.
Such an untarnished soul! I am alive with anticipation of gorging upon your perfection!
The demonette lifted Shriver closer, the Inquisitor writhing between the impossibly strong pincers. The creature flicked out its pointed tongue and caressed the Inquisitor's cheek. Shriver's flesh burned under the acid touch, but she gritted her teeth.
But you would not be pleasing to the prince. wench. You black-armed minions know that your true loyalty...
A shot rang out. Shriver slipped from the demonette's grip, hitting the floor at the same time as the Neverborn's twitching corpse. The Inquisitor tucked and rolled, drawing her plasma pistol as she did so and pointing it in the direction of her unseen savior.
Contact!
I don't see anything. Wait. There. Green armor. Eldar warrior baton.
A second shot flew towards Balthazar, but the Dark Angel shifted his weight and the razor-sharp disc whipped past. Tolga stood motionless for what seemed like an eternity. A thin red line across his forehead, gradually thickening as blood trickled from the fatal wound where the shuriken had struck him. By the time his body hit the floor, Shriver and the rest of the kill team were already in pursuit of his killer. Though each space marine had already noted the doom inflicted upon the craft world, it wasn't until they drove deeper into Keris that the true extent of its degradation became apparent. Halls, once laced with pristine ivory wraithbone, had turned unnaturally black, like damage from a fire that had burned inside glass walls. Formerly smooth surfaces bristled with spines and nodules, while thick veins bulged from the floor and ceilings, circulating garish liquid around the vast artificial world. And the screaming. Always the screaming.
Maintain pursuit!
What about the mission?
The parameters have changed. Pursue and capture the Eldar for questioning. Break off only if it deviates from the route of our mission.
Corica, at the rear of the hunting pack, turned to see that Shriver had fallen back and was still speaking. Instinctively, the Doom Eagle blink-clicked through the Vox channels, but each of them was silent. The Inquisitor was communicating with someone via an encrypted link. The Death Watch captain had little time to ponder this as he rounded a corner to see the green-armored warrior standing barely 50 meters in front of him, pinning down his three surviving battle brothers with a torrent of razor-sharp shuriken. He raised his bolter, but the Xenos reacted a fraction quicker, a graceful half-twist, altering the aim of its weapon and sending a dozen more lethal discs screaming along the corridor. With the Eldar's attention now on the kill team captain, Balthazar, Cook, and Gallius unleashed a barrage of their own, the corridor lit up by flame and muzzle flare. Corica followed in its wake, shuriken flying past his sprinting form or bouncing off his black armor, cracking the surface of the settlement.
With me, brothers! The Xenos may have survived the horrors of this place, but it will not draw breath much longer!
The kill team emerged from cover, following their captain after the Eldar, who had ghosted around another corner. The corridor opened into a wide vestibule, four new passages branching off from the pulsating chamber like arteries attached to a dark heart.
Which way now, Captain?
Without breaking stride, and with the Inquisitor too far behind to assess the situation, Corica made the call.
Split up.
Corica slowed his pace, scanning his surroundings for any sign that the Eldar had passed this way. Inquisitor Shriver had provided the kill team with Auspex scry maps of the craft world, but these predated its fall. The gloomy maze at its heart was the construct of its new masters, and the Space Marines had to rely on the pathfinding skills drilled into them as scouts to navigate its twisted passages.
Be alert, brothers! The Eldar is not the only foe in these tunnels.
Two serpentine beasts materialized from the gloom ahead of Corica. Scales shimmering as if bathed in oil, the things slithered towards the Death Watch captain, mouths opened wide to reveal needle-sharp fangs. A single bolt around to each beast sent them back to the ether that had spawned them. Projected onto the interior of his helmet's visor, Corica noted the ident runes of the three other surviving space marines.
Gallius, Balthazar, what is your status?
My route converged with that of Brother Balthazar. We are encountering warp spawn. Any sign of the assassin?
It's moving fast. Follow my mark as soon as you're disengaged. Kuth, you too. Inquisitor.
I'm 300 meters behind you. Continue your pursuit, and I'll rendezvous with you once the Eldar has been dealt with.
In the darkness ahead, Korika caught a glimpse of bright green armor. The Eldar's reflexes may have been quick, but it did not have the stamina for a sustained pursuit. Korika's shots drove the warrior down a side passage.
Gallius, Balthazar, it's heading your way. I'm on its heels.
Acknowledged. Contact. We've engaged the Eldar. Cover me, Dark Angel.
On the display inside his helmet, Korika watched as Gallius's icon blinked out. He rounded the bend, bolter raised, just in time to witness Balthazar smashing his fist into the face of the Eldar, the lithe Xenos crumpling easily. Instantly, the Doom Eagle was over the prone Eldar, poised to deliver the killing shot. Gallius's corpse lay beside them, his body ruined by a score of shuriken.
Stay your hand, Captain. Surely the prisoner is more useful to us alive.
I'm only doing what you should have done, Balthazar.
Balthazar is right, Captain.
Korika turned to see Inquisitor Shriver with Kuth in tow. His weapon did not move from the Eldar's brow.
You claim to know where to find the artifact we seek, so the alien is of no use to us.
This craft world fell centuries ago, yet she still lives. If she knows the safe passages through Kaes, then perhaps we can complete our mission without further losses.
Korika remained still for a moment, his finger tight over the bolter's trigger.
Very well.
The Doom Eagle relaxed and maglocked his bolter to his thigh.
Balthazar, bring the Xenos. Kuth, attend to Brother Gallius.
We should just kill her. Be done with it. The W killed two of our...
Let not their death be in vain. If she can find a safe passage to the artifact, then we must use that to our advantage.
Why is she even alive at all? You had the chance to kill her, but instead rendered her unconscious.
The intelligence that will provide us is worth more than petty revenge, Captain.
She stirs.
Before the downed Eldar even have a chance to gather her wits and regain her bearings, Korika was upon her, lifting her from the ground by her throat.
Speak, Xenos! Who are you, and how have you survived among this nest of for so long?
Put her down, Captain. She cannot answer my questions with a crushed...
Reluctantly, the Doom Eagle relinquished his grip. Kuth regarded her warily.
Can she even understand us?
She understands well enough, even though her armor's translation circuits appear to have been damaged. The question still stands. Who are you, and how are you still alive?
Her head lolling as she tried to rouse herself, the Eldar's almond-shaped eyes blinked rapidly as awareness flooded back. Opening them fully, she snapped to attention, suddenly aware of her surroundings and predicament. She reached behind her to where she expected to find the shuriken catapult holstered at her back. Finding it missing, she began to scramble backwards, away from her captors.
Looking for this...
Kuth held her weapon aloft, the ancient gun looking tiny and delicate in his massive hand.
I shall ask you more time before I let Korika ask the questions. How are you still here?
The Eldar looked this way and that, assessing her chances of escape. Determining that she had none, she brushed sweat-drenched black hair away from her eyes and stood up defiantly.
I am Diane, last Fee Dunear of Kaerys.
Fee Dunear? I don't understand that word.
My armor's translation circuits are indeed malfunctioning. I think you hit me too hard.
I don't think he hit you hard enough.
It means guardian, lowliest of the Eldar warrior classes.
Diane bristled at the Inquisitor's dismissive comment.
But that only answers what you are, not how you've managed to survive this infested pit for so many years, nor how you were able to slay two Death Watch Space Marines.
It was foreseen.
What do you mean?
It was foreseen. Therefore, it must be.
The witch speaks in riddles. She is of no use to us. Let us kill her and continue with our mission.
Shriver ignored him.
Was our coming here foreseen?
Both of your journeys to Kaer Iss were laid bare to our Farseers.
Then you know what I am going to ask you next.
Diane nodded.
You ask for my help. You will ask me to show you the secret ways to the craft world's infinity circuit.
And what is your answer?
The Monkey seek to rid Kaer Iss of the corruption at its heart. You crave the Hoshmeran Giat and wish to take it from this place. The spirits also desire this thing. So I will aid you in your mission. There is a condition, though.
You are in no position to bargain.
You are in no position to refuse my aid. Without me, your mission fails. That, too, was foreseen.
What about me pulling this trigger and smearing these walls with your brains? Was that foreseen?
Stand down! What is this condition?
Diane looked to the ground, then directly into the Inquisitor's eyes.
When all of this is over, when your mission is accomplished and the Hoshmeran Guild is yours, you must kill me.
Is this a malfunction of your translation circuits? Or do you really seek your own death?
I am the last of the Kaer Iss Elder. My people have been dead for centuries, and I have been forced to exist alone on a world that has been turned into a vile parody of the glorious gem it once was. If I could have died sooner, I would have. Believe me.
Very well. I agree to your condition, but you had better be able to keep your end of the bargain.
I can get you to the threshold, but the chamber itself is guarded by a powerful entity. I have spent centuries trying to find a way past it, but to no avail. The only way you can access the Infinity Circuit is to battle your way past the sentry.
And was it foreseen? We defeat this sentry.
Without saying a word, Diane led them from the chamber. The hours since they had agreed to follow Diane had passed mainly in silence, and true to her word, the route they had taken was free of the servants of Chaos. Strange runes and icons adorned the black Wraithbone walls. Some had faded, the centuries taking their toll, but others were more vivid and recent. Occasionally, Kuth would stop and run his fingers over the outlines of the symbols, as if deep in study, before continuing with his appointed task. Corica leaned towards Shriver.
The Eldar woman cannot be trusted. She has already killed two of our number, and her claim that she has survived here for centuries alone doesn't ring true. There must be more of her kind here. She may be leading us into an ambush.
She is merely a means to an end, Captain. Regardless of whether she is the sole survivor of this craft world or not, she has spent centuries honing her defenses and securing these tunnels. If she plans to double-cross us, we shall be ready for it. In the meantime, let us be grateful for the respite from the demons.
The battle to secure the insertion point and subsequent hunting of the Eldar had taken their toll on the Inquisitor and the survivors of the kill team. Shriver's golden armor was dented and tarnished, unrecognizable from the pristine suit she had worn when she had swooped aboard the craft world. Balthazar and Kuth had deep gouges rent into their warplate, but looked relatively unscathed when compared to Corica. Dried blood smeared his torso from a wound that had torn all the way down to the flesh.
Be that as it may, when the time comes, I'll be the one to put a bolt shell in her skull. For Tolga and for Gallius.
Shriver smiled coldly and nodded.
Balthazar, keep a close watch. Her kin could be waiting around any of these corners.
Up ahead, Balthazar nudged Diane hard with the barrel of his bolter, driving her forwards and causing her to stumble.
Monkey peddler!
Lucky for you, your translator's broken, or I probably would have taken offense at that. I have a question for you, Xenos. If all of this was foreseen, then why did Tolga and Gallius have to die? If the entity that awaits us at the end of these tunnels is as powerful as you claim, then surely it would have been better that five brothers of the Death Watch face it, rather than just three.
The explanation is too complex for a mind as narrow as yours. You wouldn't understand.
Alphazon nudged her hard in the back again.
Then make me understand.
You have to think of the universe as a song. Each living thing within it, part of the choir that sings it. Some voices are louder than others, others just there to provide the harmony. The tempo and timbre may change during the singing, but the song is continuous, never ending. Some of those that sing are destined to for all eternity, their voices leading the rest of the choir. But for many, their contribution is only brief. A single note, a bar of a chorus. Those two I killed, their songs had been sung. No place left for them in the choir. I have a question for you, Monkey.
You are our prisoner. I will ask the questions.
Diane sneered.
I may have been the one who silenced their voices, but you could have prevented both of their deaths. So why didn't you?
Angered, Balthazar was about to reply when he noticed something on the edge of his vision, a barely perceptible glow coming from further along the tunnel. He sent Diane sprawling to the floor and held his bolter over her.
Halt! Light up ahead!
Corica and Kuth advanced alongside him.
Inquisitor, remain here and keep watch over the prisoner. Balthazar, Kuth, with me.
Alphazar lifted his weapon. With alarming speed, Diane rolled away and sprang to her feet, putting herself in front of the Space Marines to block their passage.
I was telling the truth. No ambush awaits you ahead.
Corica grabbed her by the shoulder and shoved her to the floor behind him. Bolter raised, he and Balthazar flanked Kuth as they slowly crept along the tunnel. Shriver kept her plasma pistol trained on the Eldar, the two of them saying nothing to each other as the Space Marines moved away. After several minutes, the Inquisitor's vox bead crackled.
Inquisitor, you had better come and look at this.
The smooth darkness of the corrupted Wraithbone Tunnel had opened out into a wide vestibule, brightly lit by crystal lamps. The walls of the approach were daubed with countless warding sigils, fresh and bold, which Kuth perused carefully. The Inquisitor and the remainder of the kill team instead focused their attention on the contents of the chamber, stacked from floor to ceiling with books, pieces of art, plants, and other ephemera. Shriver picked up one of the tomes, a thick volume with an elaborate cover made from some strange alien material, and flicked through the pages.
Explain yourself, Xenos. What is this?
We are not far from our destination. Let us leave now, and your mission will soon be accomplished.
Shriver discarded the book and was about to reach for another when something caught her attention at the edge of the chamber.
Please, I urge you to leave now and follow me.
The Inquisitor approached the source of her curiosity and knelt down to inspect it. Bedrolls and blankets were stuffed into a gap. Beneath them, Shriver uncovered stacks of what she took to be Picts. Unlike the two-dimensional images she was used to, these had a quality of depth to them, as if the subjects were alive and trapped, like flies in amber. Many of them depicted Eldar warriors in full armor and regalia, but others showed the civilian citizens of the craft world going about their daily duties. Shriver went through them disinterestedly, but stopped on one in particular. It was of an adult Eldar female with her arm around the shoulders of a male child against a backdrop of fruit bushes, not unlike those growing in planters scattered around the chamber.
Is this you?
Diane's brow creased, and she turned away. Disinterested, Balthazar kicked over a carefully ordered stack of ceramics.
What is all this junk, anyway?
This junk is all that remains of Caerys. An entire culture distilled into the contents of a single chamber.
Your people are dead. What use is all this?
I wouldn't expect you to understand. Your culture is predicated on war and destruction. How can you comprehend the value of any act of creation? The legacy of artistic endeavor.
Koreka looked up from where he had been examining the hilt of a ceremonial blade, encrusted with rare jewels worth enough to buy and sell entire worlds.
Is any of this useful to you, Inquisitor?
Shriver dropped the picks and studied the spines of the books stacked high against the walls, pulling several out for further inspection.
None of this holds any interest for the Ordo.
What should we do with it?
Shriver fixed Diane with a cold glare, malice blazing in her eyes.
Do as you see fit, Captain.
Please, don't do this! This is all that is left of my people, my culture, my family! You are capable of compassion, I can sense it. You've seen and felt more than your fair share of grief and desperation. I know you can empathize with me.
Any empathy I may have felt for you died along with the two battle brothers you murdered. Kuth.
Yes, Captain.
Burn it. Burn it all.
Diane's spirit, already pulled taut when the kill team arrived on Kerris, was finally broken. Her body language told its own tale, shoulders slumped, feet dragging. When the tunnel eventually terminated in a flight of steep stairs, she broke her silence.
We are here.
Balthazar ascended the steps to be confronted by a set of double doors, barely wide enough for a space marine to pass through. Once crafted from immaculate wraithbone, the ivory portal had devolved into withered black flesh, its surface glistening with foul moisture. Balthazar pushed at the doors with his bolter, and they parted easily to reveal more darkness beyond.
Clear!
Koreka and Kuth followed the Dark Angel to the top of the stairs. Shriver motioned for Diane to follow, but the Eldar stood firm. The Inquisitor raised her plasma pistol by way of persuasion, but before she could react, Diane had gripped the barrel and placed the gun to her forehead. An eye blinked later, the three Space Marines' weapons were trained on the sole survivor of Kerris.
Our bargain, Inquisitor. Honor it.
Shriver hesitated, weighing up her options. Her decision made, she attempted to lower the pistol.
Until I know that you have led us to the right place, you shall remain alive.
Diane gripped the weapon tighter, pushing the muzzle harder against her forehead.
I do not wish to face what awaits us beyond the threshold.
What do you mean? What awaits us on the other side?
Diane ignored the Doom Eagle.
Please, kill me.
Faster than even the Eldar's reflexes could respond to it, Shriver kicked Diane hard in the stomach. The Xenos dropped to her knees, gasping for breath.
You die when I say you can die.
Shriver gripped the Eldar by the back of the neck and dragged her up the steps towards what were once doors.
Till then, lead on.
What awaited them beyond that fetid gateway made everything they had experienced thus far in the craft world pale by comparison. Where the tunnels and chambers had at least borne some resemblance to their original state, the once grand hall in which they found themselves was unrecognizable as an Eldar construct. Grotesque foliage grew all around, lurid in color and sickening in shape, with pendulous fronds descending from the ceiling. At the heart of the growth, what was once a window onto the stars blinked like a giant eye. Each time it opened and closed, a new scene of debauchery was revealed. A glimpse beyond the veil, where the servants of the Prince of Pleasure cavorted and writhed. Diane's attention was elsewhere. She staggered towards a thick section of the mutated plants, holding out her hand as if to grasp one of the strange fruits that weighed down its spindly, finger-like branches. She sank to her knees, sobbing.
What has it done to the garden? All my life I tended them, and now they have been turned into this. All that care, all that love, twisted and malformed. Why did I have to see this? Why couldn't you have just killed me?
That's all you were, a mere gardener, and yet you killed two of our brothers. The Inquisitor may not have had the stomach to kill you back there, but I have no such reservations.
Hold, Captain. I sense something. The Immaterium is about to...
Cuth's warning came too late. Heralded by the tang of scorched ozone, one of the favored of Slaanesh birthed itself into real space, scant meters behind Inquisitor Shriver. The four-armed monstrosity flicked its black, snake-like tongue into the air, savoring the taste and new sensations of the physical realm. Shriver turned to face the newly formed demon, her eyes growing wide with realization at what was about to happen. Her plasma pistol was half-raised when the Keeper of Secrets struck out with one of its wicked claws, impaling the Inquisitor through the chest, splitting her tarnished golden armor. The Space Marines opened fire, but as quickly as it had appeared, the demon twisted sideways and vanished from reality, the cone of flame and bolter shells hitting only the afterimage of the beast. Shriver slumped to her knees, then fell forwards into a puddle of her own blood, silently struggling for breath. Balthazar moved to aid the stricken woman, but Cuth grabbed the Dark Angel hard by the shoulder and spun him around.
She is beyond your help, brother. Take the Xenos and finish the mission.
Don't be foolish, Cuth. You cannot hope to defeat that thing alone.
Cuth removed his helm, revealing his gaunt features.
My entire existence as a Space Marine has been building to this. I am meant to be here, standing alone. Defeating this demon is my destiny. It is what I have been bred to do.
You do not need to make this sacrifice, brother. No matter how noble it may be.
He's right. Cuth's place on the kill team was for this very eventuality. You must reach the Infinity Circuit. Finish the mission.
The Inquisitor remained prone, tightly gripping the gaping wound in her torso.
But how will we know
where... Trust me, you'll know it when you see it.
She closed her eyes wearily and did not open them again.
Brother, you do not have to do this alone!
But I do, Balthazar. If you and Corica stay, then three lives are forfeit instead of only one. I am a weapon forged specifically for this purpose.
The Doom Eagle and the Dark Angel looked to each other. On the edge of the chamber, the demon stepped once more from the material.
Go! Now!
Corica grabbed Diane under the shoulder and hauled her to her feet.
The Infinity Circuit. Can you find it from here?
She should have killed me! She should have killed me! She should have killed me!
Corica shook the Guardian hard.
I shall not ask again, Xenos! Can you find the Infinity Circuit from here?
I think so.
Show us!
Corica turned and nodded respectfully to Cuth. Practically dragging the Eldar, the Doom Eagle set off through the dense foliage at pace. Balthazar placed his gauntlet over his pauldron in a traditional warrior's salute before leaving Cuth to his fate.
Burn, warp, spawn!
The Keeper of Secrets rolled under the burst of flame, bringing itself upright with its sword poised.
Why can't I see you, Space Marine? What confounded sorcery blinds me to your presence?
Cuth sent another torrent of fire in the demon's direction in response. This time, the beast wasn't so quick to react, and its otherworldly flesh blistered in the heat.
Oh, but I can't see that accursed flame! Your own weapon betrays you.
The Chosen of Slaanesh leapt and swung its huge sword in a wide arc. Anticipating the counterattack, Cuth had already moved, sending the beast sprawling forwards onto the floor of the debased chamber. It rose near the doorway that the kill team had entered by, its back to Cuth, oblivious to his presence.
Cuth! That is what they called you, is it not? That is no name for a mortal. It sounds more like a name taken from the Pantheon!
That is why I cannot see you. Your soul is entwined with the warp.
You are tainted, Cuff. There is an aspect of the demonic about you. I can taste it.
Cuff slowly ventured forwards, the Keeper of Secrets' back still exposed. He raised the heavy flamer, the firing stud clicking in readiness. It was the opening the demon needed. Too quickly for Cuff to comprehend, the Keeper of Secrets whirled around, lifting him bodily in its enormous claws.
Did your brother Space Marines know that they walked with one who had submitted himself to the touch of the ruinous powers, Cuff?
Cuff is one of many names I've held. Demon filth. I have been Ver. I have been Amdar. I have been Ush. I have been Mir. And countless other syllables of the demon tongue. But none of them is my real name. My true name.
Drawing on every ounce of his strength, Cuff turned himself around in the demon's grip, his armor rending as he did so. The black paint scraped from his pauldron to reveal his true livery. A horned skull set upon a red field.
Your true
name has no power over me, wretch.
Oh, but it does. I am a son of Banish, a proud brother of the Exorcists chapter. Since my rebirth beneath the Fortress Monastery, since my mind was wiped, ridding me of my past, I have been honed as a living weapon with one singular purpose, to vanquish you. I have worn all my former names as a mask, disguising my true purpose, useful at the time, but shed as needed. My true name has remained buried deep in the recesses of my mind, protected by the strongest wards so that it cannot betray me. But I no longer need those shackles. Drink your fill of my memories, demon!
No!
The Keeper of Secrets recoiled, losing its grip on Cuff and allowing the Space Marine to free his weapon. Above them, on the other side of the veil, a chorus of demons danced, laughed, and cavorted in celebration of what was to come.
My true name is your true name, demon. And now that you have drawn me close, you are certain to hear it. Come, say it with me.
Cuff's icon blinked on the visor display of both surviving Space Marines. One moment it was vivid green, the next it was gone. Neither Corica nor Balthazar reacted to their brother's death. The time for mourning would come later, should either of them leave the craft world alive.
This way!
Diane ran with a newfound energy, and they followed her through the withered plants and bushes, hacking with their blades, never letting the Xenos out of their field of vision. A great set of double doors, as black and tainted as the rest of the craft world structure, loomed up before them. Without arresting her stride, Diane rushed towards them and hauled at the handles. Without sparing a single backward glance, Corica followed Balthazar into the Infinity Circuit Chamber. Diane spun on her heel, expecting to find the Space Marine's guns trained on her. It took a few seconds for her eyes to adjust to the darkness, but when they did, she found that the two survivors of the kill team were facing away from her, bolters fixed on a new target.
Is it active, brother?
Balthazar took several steps forward, cautiously approaching a large structure in the chamber.
Negative.
Diane finally saw the object of the Space Marine's attention.
Wraithlord.
Its wraithbone armor the same color as Diane's, the giant Eldar Walker stood majestic in the center of the chamber, two massive fists hanging threateningly by its side, head bowed as if in prayer. Where once its spirit stone would have been bright, alive with the soul of a great warrior, the gem was dull and empty. A dormant war machine reduced to nothing more than a statue. Alongside it, and just as immobile, stood the blue crystalline form of an Eldar Farseer, arm outstretched and reaching for the stone.
They're all inert.
Balthazar pulled a flare from a pouch at his hip, igniting it and tossing it to the ground in one fluid movement. Diane blinked harshly, the unexpected light momentarily blinding her. When her vision resolved itself, she wished the effect had been permanent.
No. No, no! This cannot be!
Dwarfing even the giant form of the Wraith Lord, the Infinity Circuit stretched as far as she could see in all directions, countless spirit stones bound together in a multidimensional mosaic. All of them were empty, except for one.
Ushnirengeld.
At the heart of the circuit sat a flawless black spirit stone, its smooth surface as dark as the void, seemingly drawing in the flare's meager light. Diane started towards it, but Corica stopped her.
I believe we have found our objective.
Edging around the dead Wraith Lord, the Doom Eagle went to retrieve their prize.
What is it?
It is the Ushnirengeld, the ruin of Kerris.
Diane could not take her eyes off the thousands of empty spirit stones that formed the lifeless Infinity Circuit.
The Prince of Ruin devoured them all, save for this one.
Why did he spare it? I don't understand.
You understand very little, Monkey. The doom of our craft world did not come from without. It came from within. The Prince of Ruin had long desired Kerris, but all entry to him was barred by the powerful wards placed over the webway portals, the key to which was possessed by the Autarch Enderil. And so it was that when the Autarch's own daughter, Enderan, came of maturity, one of the prince's most favored placed a glamour upon itself, transforming into a perfect vision of Eldar beauty. None could resist its guiles, least of all a naive girl. And she fell deeply and passionately in love with him, submitting to his will in every way, including stealing the key to the gateway from her father. The ensuing war against the invading demon host was long and bloody. Some of us fought to the very end, Enderan included. Such was her shame at being tricked in such a fashion and her desire for redemption, and she would prove to be the final casualty of the battle for the craft world. Her demon lover entered the chamber of the awakening Avatar, possessing the aspect of Cain, and wreaking bloody havoc upon the already shattered craft world. In one final act of desperation, Enderan faced the Avatar alone, her fury at her lover's treachery driving her on. Her body, having long since passed the point of exhaustion, the demon Avatar pressed home his advantage and ended her life's song. Maybe it was because the stain upon her soul was so indelible, but the spirit stone at Enderan's breast turned the purest black. The demon Avatar tore it from her armor, and he must have placed it here when he feasted on the souls of my people. One final act of desecration.
What did the Inquisitor want with the soul of a dead Eldar traitor?
I do not know. Nor do I care any longer. Everything has been taken from me, except my life. And I beg of you that you uphold your end of the bargain and take that from me too.
Gladly. Corica! No!
The Dark Angel's warning came too late. Corica's shot took Diane from her feet and into the crystalline form of a Farseer, which glowed the most brilliant blue as it shattered into a million fragments. The Wraith Lord stirred, its spirit stone shining so brightly even the Ushmirengeld could not absorb its light.
You fool! You did exactly what she wanted. All the Wraith Lord lacked was a soul to guide it!
The Eldar Walker shakily lifted one of its massive fists and swung for Balthazar, the Dark Angel barely rolling under the blow and coming up firing. In rage, Dien's spirit threw the Wraithlord's other fist around in a clumsy arc, connecting with Corica's breastplate and splitting it open. The Death Watch captain somehow remained on his feet, only to be floored by the follow-up blow. Balthazar's aim was true, each shot striking the newly roused Wraithlord at the elbow. The left arm dropped limp at its side, sparks showering from the mechanism. Undeterred, the Wraithlord propelled the other fist down hard, only to find that Corica had used the diversion to roll clear, already taking aim to unleash another volley.
I'm out! Cover me!
Tossing the empty bolter aside, Balthazar reached down to his belt. Coming up on the walker's blind side, he dived for the armored leg. The Wraithlord spun around, the remaining fist striking Balthazar hard in the midriff and sending him sprawling backwards. Dien's spirit steadied the Xenos machine, turning to look down. The detonator on the magnetic charge clamped to its leg, turned from green to red.
Down!
Are you all right, Brother Balthazar?
Corica held out his hand to the prone Dark Angel. Fragments of charred wraith bone were scattered around them.
I've survived worse.
Balthazar accepted the Prophet Gauntlet and pulled himself upright, examining his power armor to see the extent of the damage that Dien's final blow had caused. His visor had been torn open.
The Spirit Stone.
Corica put his other hand out towards Balthazar, fist clenched. He opened his fingers to reveal the black gem, completely undamaged.
Perfectly safe.
Good. Now, hand it over.
The Doom Eagle withdrew the stone, reaching for the bolter slung at his back with his free hand.
No. The gem will be delivered to the Ordo Xenos as per the parameters of our mission.
The Dark Angel stared coldly at him.
Securing the gem for the Ordo Xenos was never the aim of this mission. It was always intended for the Dark Angels.
Shriver knew of this. No matter. The Inquisitor is dead. Until I know the artifact's power and purpose, it will remain in my charge.
I don't think so.
What makes you so sure?
Because the Inquisitor isn't dead.
The shot took Corica in the throat, blazing through his gorget and almost severing his head in a superheated burst of plasma. He toppled forwards onto the Wraithbone deck. From the darkness, Shriver emerged, her still glowing pistol in one hand, the other held to her stomach to contain her innards. Her augmetic eye struggled to focus on Balthazar.
Tell Asriel my debt is...
Stepping over the Inquisitor's corpse, Balthazar knelt beside Corica. The Black Spirit Stone was still gripped in his fist.
Nothing personal, brother. It was an honor to serve under you all these years. But my first allegiance has always been to my chapter.
And the gem?
Asmodai had remained silent during Balthazar's account, his stern gaze unflinching. The warrior reached for a pouch slung at his waist, and the interrogator chaplain motioned for him to stand.
You have spoken to no one since your return.
The only souls who know of my return are the serfs who were present in the hangar when I landed. And Master Seraphicus, of course.
Balthazar did not need to elaborate further. His mission with the Death Watch would remain secret, even from his own brothers. Asmodai nodded. He tipped the pouch upside down and allowed its contents to fall into his gauntleted palm. He regarded it at length, marveling at the perfect smoothness of its shape, the tarnished luster that brooked no reflection, the swirling energy pulsing within it.
Master Asmodai.
Asmodai snapped his head up, fixing the warrior once more with his gaze.
You have once again served your chapter well, Brother Balthazar. Your expediency and diligence are duly noted, and will not go without a reward.
The forefinger of Asmodai's left hand traced a horizontal line across his brow, a gesture that Balthazar returned.
Go now, and return to the Deathwing. Speak not of these past 12 years, and your brothers will not inquire of your whereabouts or service. The Lion watches over you, Balthazar.
As he does you, Master Asmodai.
The two Dark Angels nodded their respect before Balthazar headed for the heavy doors that led from the chamber. He was just about to push them open when Asmodai spoke once again.
And Brother Balthazar?
Yes, Master.
It might be prudent to don your Terminator armor before you rejoin your brothers.
Smirking at the Interrogator Chaplain's rare display of humor, no matter how grim, Balthazar made his exit. Asmodai waited a long while, contemplating the stone, as he turned it over and over between his fingers.
My Lord Azrael, it is done.
The Spirit Stone. Do you have it?
I do. Balthazar played his role perfectly.
And are you certain that when the time comes, this will work?
My own studies, combined with the divinations of Ezekiel and Hermiel, would suggest so.
Then all of the pieces are in place. The corrupted Spirit Stone is ours. The prisoner you took on Sesabar has given us a location, and the girl that Ezekiel encountered on Honoria should already be in possession of the device.
What now?
Now, we rescue our long-lost kinsman.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this program.